Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Hurry into Menards and save big money. Stock up on water softener Salt for softer skin and cleaner clothes. Diamond Crystal is the perfect choice of salt to minimize water softener tank residue. It helps your soaps and detergents clean better while increasing the life of your appliances and plumbing. Save big on Diamond Crystal products at Menards. And don't forget to check out the flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're here to continue our set of draft countdowns today. Today, we're going to look at the edge players in this year's draft. An exciting group. Lots of different variation in play style, as there often is at the edge position. Here to talk about with me is Voss Larikos. Voss, how are you doing?
I'm great, Ken. Thank you for having me. Looking forward to draft season heating up with the uncertainty around a lot of the other parts of the offseason, something for us to sink our teeth into.
Always a lot of fun. And you pretty much have always done, I think, one of these groups per year. It's always a lot of fun talking about one of them with you. I know you often have gotten the safety group, it seems like, in various discussions, but this year to have you on edge is a little different, a little cool. So let's talk, first of all, about the Ravens' overall need on the edge, because it's a position where they have some youth. It's not like cornerback, where they have a lot of need for a revamping a youth or even defensive line, where they have a couple fourth-year players and some aging players they need to replace. But in terms of the edge position, they have two young guys at rush linebacker in Owe and Ajabo, both of whom the Ravens are looking forward to big things from.
Sure. As John Harbaugh mentioned in the recent press conference, two first-round caliber talents, and it should be an exciting pair. Coupled with Bowser, I think what they're really looking for is some additional rotational talent, so they don't have a situation as they had early on the beginning of last season, where especially Odafe Owe seemed to wear down with too heavy of a workload.
Yeah, absolutely, and wore down a little bit with the workload. A lot of people I've heard say, he's 24 or whatever, he shouldn't wear down at all, and I mean that's not fair. Players often have a lot of trouble adapting to a high snap count when they come into the NFL, but beyond that, Owe also was playing out of position. And he's playing Sam linebacker, which I think is one of the real big needs. The Ravens, unless they're willing to move Owe again, do not have any obvious Sam linebacker backup for Bowser on the roster. So if you need a guy who can occasionally drop to cover at a minimum, it would have to be Owe in an emergency as the roster stands right now.
Sure, that's definitely a need. I presume Dalen Hayes will get another look at camp. Latched on with the team. Now he's getting a little bit up there, so I'm not sure how much more developmental value you want to prescribe to him. But the way I see it, essentially, you certainly could use a Sam. You certainly could use a elite blue chip pass rusher. You know, I don't think there's such thing as too many. That's a corner position like a cornerback or an offensive tackle. And the other kind of skill set that's intriguing to me is a jumbo edge, maybe someone in sort of the Courtney Upshaw mold, or just a big, thick body guy that can two gap, that can set the edge, but can also reduce inside on passing situations, especially without Calais Campbell. That could maybe round out that defensive line group as well.
Great points both there. The idea of having a two-down run-stopping edge is something the Ravens don't really have right now. Bowser is not a bad run defender, actually pretty good, I think. But you can't have him playing every down at Sam, so you need to have somebody eat some run-snap downs on that side. But also, even on the rush side, having additional guys who can stop the run is not a terrible thing. And having a bigger guy who can move inside is more important probably than it's ever been. They lack a lot of interior players that they really want to have on the field on passing downs. Matabike, I think, is right. Matt Washington could become that guy. Pierce, I guess, could become that guy, but he's just a fairly specialized need. I guess Travis Jones could become that guy. But I look at them as a team that really only wants to have one defensive lineman on the field on pass rush downs, which means you need three outside linebackers, including some versatility there. We saw David Ajabo, I think, play a few snaps on the inside last year. That could be done again. But I think having a bigger kick inside guy would be good to get, whether you get it from the vet market or you get it as a rookie here.
In a way, I think you're presuming that Ojabo will take Justin Houston's role from last season, potentially, unless Houston is brought back, which I'd certainly be a proponent of. But you need someone to take on what Jason Pierre-Paul did, mm-hmm. as far as really being a strong, firm edge setter with some, you know, hand in the dirt capability.
And JPP, very legitimate possibility to come back for the Ravens, as far as he has not signed anywhere else yet. I'm aware. Yeah. So he'd be one of the guys. In fact, edge is one of the positions where there were a fair number of good veteran options, and the Ravens have actually leaned on them. Wide receiver, they've been notoriously terrible at selecting wide receivers who have anything left in the tank. And it's not just a matter of the Ravens are bad at selecting. Wide receivers don't typically have anything left in the tank after 30. So, you know, finding them is going to be hard for anybody.
Yeah, just make one point. I think the Ravens, the way they've developed the edge position, has been better in comparison to the other premium positions, cornerback, wide receiver, offensive tackle. If you look through the years, I mean, Adelius Thomas, Za'Darius Smith, and Matthew Judon, all picked on day three. I don't think you could find three day three picks they developed into borderline Pro Bowlers. Pernell McPhee as well. So they do have an efficiency there, I think.
I would agree completely. And, it rivals what they've done on the offensive line. And they've had some really bad luck with second round guys at defensive end. You mentioned Courtney Upshaw. Courtney Upshaw, big disappointment with the Ravens, drafted 37th overall and had more personal fouls than sacks. In effect, I think it was 8-5 in his times with the Ravens. So that's not the kind of relationship you want, obviously. And then Kamala Correa, an outside linebacker who they tried to force inside due to their own personnel needs. Kafusi, Brandon Kafusi, which didn't work out. Yeah, so they've had a few clearly that haven't worked out all in the second round. But it's nice to see Tyus Bowser turn the corner, because a lot of people, and I don't mean last year, it's obviously been several years now that Bowser's been good, but a lot of people had already thrown Bowser in that category before he really blossomed before free agency.
Yeah, by and large, I think probably all fan bases have a little bit too high expectation about what you're getting out of the rookies, their rookie year, their second year. There's a developmental arc for sure.
All right. And they do have, I think that's one of the nice points, is they have a chance to be patient with these guys in the first and second year. But with that in mind, let's jump into our top 10. We'll do it the way we always do. We're calling them down from 10 to 1. Normally the guest goes first. I'm going to go first because I cheated on this one. I had two guys tied at number 10. And I'll just toss the first number out there. A guy a lot of people like a lot more, and I know this may be a little bit controversial, but I have Miles Murphy of Clemson tied for number 10. There are things I really like about him. He's obviously, fits the mold of a pass rusher in a lot of ways at 6'5", 258, long-armed, a little bit under 34 inches, which is good, but there's a lot of exceptional arm length in this class. Didn't run the 40. Do the explosiveness drills where there are really some questions about who he is. 25 bench reps was pretty good. but not a bender. And mm-hmm. this is a problem with a lot of guys in this class, Voss, that have modest speed and power to work through contact. And some of them have even good power at the college level that they work through contact so well, they really haven't had to learn how to be a bender, turn the corner, you know, be explosive, get that first step to the edge of that tackle, and then play at a 45-degree angle, that kind of thing. They've never had to learn in college.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I have Murphy all the way up at 5. I do have – there are some appealing traits to him. I think he does have some inside versatility. High motor player.
Yes.
I think his power does translate. You know, playing at Clemson, you know, he's going up against some pretty decent caliber players. And I do think he has some three-down versatility. Edge setting may be his best trait. His main pass rush is really just that bull rush, as you mentioned. It's not super refined. I compare him somewhat to, or at least I've seen comparisons to Sean Merriman, who was a longtime player coming out of former Terrapin, actually. I went to school with him.
Mm-hmm.
Murphy, I think he could definitely help the team, but I think his skill set is not worth a first-round pick, and I think he's probably going to be a first-round pick.
That would definitely fit my definition of overrated for Murphy if he goes in the first round. I'll say the game I watched in total, and my usual process is try and watch one game all the way through for each player. Can't always find it. I had a tight end from Old Dominion where I didn't have a single game of tape all the way through, and you have to rely on a lot of other sources, like the highlights in part. But I don't know if you know Coots, the tight end from Old Dominion.
No, I haven't gotten into him.
Anyway, weird case, but actually on my list. So watch the Florida State game. And if you watch that game, there's a lot of good plays, run and pass, he makes. He's a good containment player against the run. I think that's something to like. I think you have the problem I see with him is because of his play style that a lot of his productivity ends up being cleanup productivity. Mm-hmm. And the Ravens certainly have a defense that relied on cleanup productivity to get home last year. I think more than anything, they need somebody like Owe or Ajabo to break out as a pass rusher. So he's hitting the corner, getting to the quarterback quickly, creating havoc, or they need somebody on the inside maybe to do mm-hmm. it. There is additional critical mass to be reached with more guys on the team who can get there and help and finish. And Murphy is a guy certainly who can do that. I think the Ravens is not exactly the stylistic fit for them either. So while I think Murphy's a little overrated because he's not a get to the quarterback in 3 second guy in the same way that some of the other guys are in this class, I think also he doesn't exactly fit the Ravens' stylistic needs at this moment in time.
No, makes perfect sense to me. I think in the first round, you want a player that's making plays autonomous, not a complimentary player that's setting other people up. At least that's what I would. Should I jump into my 10th
yes,
here?
Yes, you're number 10 guy.
Okay, Isaiah McGuire out of Missouri, 6'4", 268, 9.53 RAS, which is very good.
Mm-hmm.
Almost 34-inch arms. He's just a solid, well-rounded player, a thick-framed guy. Definitely can play some five tech, played a good bit of five tech at college, actually. Power rusher, thick frame. And I think really what he would presumably bring to the Ravens, if you can maybe land him in the third round, he'd be a nice player as an underman on twists.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I loved him too. He did not quite make my list. He's one of four guys that I had in my honorable mention category. I think he's a guy who the lack of polish makes him a really nice upside guy with Chuck Smith. And by the way, there's a lot of guys in this draft who can benefit from Chuck Smith. It really hopefully is going to show in terms of the positional coaching value the Ravens have acquired there. But he also is a pure rush linebacker. I liked him as a guy who could eat up run snaps on the rush side. He might be able to do that on the Sam side as well if you're not depending too heavily on that guy to drop. But anyway, I did like him. He's just slightly outside of my top 10 for that. Probably number 12 for me of my group. Bend and explosiveness are both there. Definitely lacks the complete toolkit. And, you know, people will hear that me say that and say that's a bad thing. It's really not. It's a source of potential growth. If he's already producing, yes. And he had 8.5 sacks in the SEC, damn it. mean, and he doesn't really have that great spin move or the great counter or the Euro step or any of those things that he might have at this point. But he's a guy who probably does it. I don't think he's a Sam. I think he's a pure rush guy. Yeah. So, you know, those things combined to have me just drop him a little bit lower.
I think that's a great point, though, as far as a player with developmental upside. There's a lot of players in this class, especially at this position, that are unrefined. But they have, you know, high testing athleticism. They come from good pedigree. Most of them are, you know, within developmental age. So that's where you can really mine, you know, maximize your return as opposed to taking somebody that's already sort of maxed out, but maybe a little undersized or that sort of thing. There's not room to go too much further up from there.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there's one player on this in particular. We're going to talk about all of the potential mineable sources of upside when we get to him. But I kind of want to go through that with you and talk through, but you've got the exact same point I would make there. So who are we at? We're at number 10 guy. Okay. And that's Andre Carter of Army. A lot of people are going to have him lower. Massive man, 6'6 and a half, 256. That's actually, you could probably hold more weight than that on that kind of a frame. 33 3/8 is a little short for his size. He'll be 23 in June. This is an oddball draft class. There's more variation in age in this draft class than I've pretty much ever seen before. A lot of 50-year players because they had a COVID year in the middle. So you need to be very careful with age in this group. But 23 in June actually is in the sweet spot in the middle of that bell curve. There's a fair number of guys who are going to be 24 soon. There's even a couple guys that are going to be 25 or are 25 already, including one guy I had to drop because of that. Andre Carter, 19 sacks in his career, 2 ints, 5 passes defensive, one fumble recovery. Here's the big one. 5 forced fumbles. Really love the guys who find the football with their club, and he's one of the better ones in this group. Now, here's the thing. 11 bench reps. Mm-hmm. Now, he doesn't have super long arms, so the excuse really isn't there for a bad bench number, and that was a case. You know, obviously there were workout issues as well with Orlando Brown when he came out of school, just not being focused enough on what was important for the combine or being the kind of workout animal he probably should have been going to that. But he had 9 reps and it didn't end up mattering in his case. The fact that teams will be thrown off by that might be something the Ravens could benefit from, because the Ravens are going to look at his tape. And you see a big guy dictates first contact extremely well. That makes his swim move more effective. That's the thing I really noticed on tape is that he gets that defender off balance, and he can blow by him with power on that side, but you can also swim by him when he does that. So that was very good. Run defense is going to depend on getting stronger. He needs to be able to hold up that offensive tackle, use both hands on him when he needs to, run defense, being able to keep a hand free or get a hand free on the appropriate side at the appropriate time is really the important thing there. I don't see him as being right there on that, despite his massive size. He's a good patient diagnosis guy. So when you watch him, I wouldn't say he's Terrell Suggs in terms of diagnosing the screen, but there was a play against Air Force in particular. It's one of the most amazing plays I've seen from a player this year in terms of an ability to get back, get a hand on the football at a place you do not see a 4-3 end impacting the game there. So, I hope he's a guy that other teams focus on the strength concerns, and the Ravens could then be a candidate to get him maybe in the third round.
Yeah. So I had a Carter as part of my honorable mention group here. Long, quick, and really he has the frame to really bulk up, I think. Mm-hmm. So that 11 bench reps is the concern, just to play strength. Coming from a service academy, that's a player you could probably project could benefit from NFL weight room more than somebody that's coming out of Alabama or something like that.
Yeah, I've seen that in reports, is that he complained that his training schedule was getting in the way, or maybe his fitness was getting in the way of gaining a lot of weight and playing with it, right. Which is, I mean, it's a little bit surprising, because Army's got to have offensive linemen. They have to put on weight that they can't really use in training, I would think.
But. Yeah, I think it was just specifically, I mean, they run, you know, so many miles every day as part of the regiment, and some guys are, I guess, a little bit more endomorphic, and it works better for them.
Yeah, I want to take a little bit of a rabbit hole sidebar here, but my career as an actuary spent pricing, I mean, pricing a lot of products, but pricing products for the military was mm-hmm. a big part of it. And the advisors who sold this product were also ex-military. And I went to a convention of theirs once, and they brought up one guy on the screen, I won't mention his name here, who they brought him up to the stage, and they said, yeah, this is a guy, I want to read one of his old fitness reports. And it's in the game of life. The flippers were just a little too far apart. The crowd roared, and this kind of thing. So, poor guy got really beat on. It's like, how would you like to be one of the guys that's picked on? And I,
yeah, right. Oh, that's funny.
All right, so I'm sorry. You're number nine guy.
Number nine. Okay, number nine. I'm going with Derek Hall out of Auburn. 6'3", 254, 9.4 relative athletic score. 34 and a half inch arms. Mm-hmm. Also a former team captain, which we know the Ravens really like. 3-year starter for a SEC West program. That's impressive for sure. Probably the best burst in the class as far as first step. Well, maybe along with the blue chip guys we'll get to at the top. Definitely a little stiff, just an angular, linear type of athlete, but good in pursuit, good toughness for sure. Inconsistent versus the run, not the perfect frame dimensions, I think, for the Ravens scheme. More of a Carl Lawson type of leverage rusher, potentially, but a player that I do think could certainly contribute.
All right. I absolutely love Derek Hall, and there's a few reasons, but I love him even more for the Ravens scheme. So I had him all the way up at number five in mine. Okay. So you see who replaced Miles Murphy in my thing. The speed is all there. The size is right for a guy who can play Sam linebacker. So that's one of the reasons I really liked him. He just turned 22 in March. So he's one of the younger guys in this class in terms of a pass rusher. So I would project more improvement on him. Otherwise, the explosiveness on tape, I think, is very obvious in terms of getting to the corner. Now, obviously, you got to have some bend to go with that. But the explosiveness is there, and it's really corroborated by outstanding combine numbers. So it doesn't appear to be illusory or just a matter of seeing some plays. Oh, he had it there, but then the rest of the time he didn't have it, and he got knocked on his rear end. He's got that first step that really seems to be very good. He's been effective in terms of his overall productivity, not having the full toolkit in the SEC. So he's not particularly polished as a pass rusher. And again, I think that's an area where there's potential growth there. And I would think it's very reasonable to expect it given his age. So another Chuck Smith possible prototype here. And the other thing that really showed up on tape for me for Hall was a great motor. Getting after plays and finishing them, run, pass, didn't matter. Had a lot of ability to follow guys on the run. Good patience, good, you know, I think he has good backdoor containment skills to start with. But, when you're facing option quarterbacks in particular, this is the kind of guy I want to be able to chase down that run either direction. You still have to make a choice sometimes, but sometimes you have the option on whether you're holding off for a moment to try and make the play either way. And I think he fits the need for that kind of thing. I would love if the Ravens could get him on a little bit of an undervalued basis, but I think there is probably a pretty fair chance he's gone in the first two rounds. He'd be a great deal for the Ravens in round three.
Agreed. And this year, maybe more than others, I'm kind of opening up the draft board. I'm probably expecting a trade back from 22, but mm-hmm. so potentially you could have a top five pick at some point. So might as well look at everybody.
Yeah. Fair enough. All right. So let's see. You had Derek Hall. I have my number nine guy is Zach Harrison of Ohio State. Another guy a lot of people have a little bit higher. I think not everybody has him a lot higher, but he's an immense man. Freakishly long arms at 36 and a quarter, 6'5", 274, 22 in August. So one of the younger guys in this group again. Here's the matchup that you really like to see. A guy with that kind of arm length still did 25 bench reps. Mm-hmm. That's probably the single most impressive number in this class. It's better than the 30 bench rep guy later on. And it's probably the single most impressive relationship versus arm length and strength, because it's a big disadvantage to bench with the longer arms. He is not always consistent about the way he uses his length advantage. And again, I think that's an area where he can grow. But there's something also that I liked here too, is that sometimes he tries to get long with two arms, get long with one arms. And then sometimes the other guy's playing against legs so much, he just throws his shoulder into him. And I'm like, okay, that's nice as a change of pace to have, because you can really get a big advantage from that. You are giving up on probably what's best about you. Only has 11 career sacks at Ohio State, but the nice things that go with that are four forced fumbles, 9 passes defense, and 24 tackles for loss. So you know the guy's playing the run as well. Penetration comes through that first step contact advantage. It does not come through bending. He's not a get to the edge quickly, be real explosive, bend at a 45-degree angle guy. He's also got to learn some better things about pad level and leverage that'll be more important at this next level. And again, I think Chuck Smith, if he has a big year, if we're talking about Chuck Smith all season and how much he's helped players, that's going to be a very good thing for the Baltimore Ravens in terms of what could go. So,
oh, certainly.
Rush edge for Harrison, could kick inside on passing downs, was the other thing I like about him.
Yeah, so he's my number 8. So we're right one off on that. I thought he was terrific as an edge setter. And then 36 and a quarter, longer than a number 1 pick from last year, who was supposed to be the super freak, Trayvon Walker. So yeah, and actually, at least the statistical I saw was 6 strip sacks in his career. Could be off on that. I thought you said 4, but I think he has a really, really high upside. Former 5-star, young player, as you mentioned. I think he'd be a terrific player for the Ravens to add. Not quite in the 9s on the relative athletic score, 8.73. I think the agility numbers were maybe not great, but I think he could be a quality second-round pick if you're in that range somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that certainly could end. And the Ravens don't have a second round pick currently, but I'm with you. You mentioned just last time that they could be dropping. I have them for 1 and 3 the last 2 years, but if you got your numbers from, say, PFF, they often will credit a different person with a forced fumble or a tackle or a sack. Okay. So you the sack numbers can differ in that, but I'm looking at the College Football Reference to get my numbers, just to have one consistent source. In particular for drops and stuff like that, multiple sources can vary widely. So I try to be careful about having one source for that.
Pass breakups as well. He was pretty good at timing those up.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good. That's something at that size. You'd expect him certainly to have some. So I'm sorry, he was your number 8 guy.
Yeah.
So we want my number 8 guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I will struggle because I want to just call him Florida Atlantic University, but Felix Anyodike Uzama of Kansas State is my next guy on the list. And some people dropped him off probably because they don't want to pronounce his name. 6'3", 255. Definitely has great bend and a great dip move in general. Lowers his shoulder, gets right under the arm of the tackle very effectively. High motor. It pairs well with his bull rush. If you have both, that's a big advantage. And he's one of the guys in this class, doesn't have to play through contact, doesn't have to bend because of his size or length. This is a guy who can really do both, and I like that. The games I watched, he was effective even when double-teamed at maintaining position, which is really unusual for two reasons. One is he's not particularly large for this draft class. At 6'3", 255, is a small man now in the NFL. we you know, 6'7", 215 is Ted Hendricks. When he played, it's just incredible that someone, you know, that tall and thin could have had the strength of a Ted Hendricks and, you know, go into a Hall of Fame career. But that was the case. He's going to be an outside guy as a pro only. He will not be a guy who kicks inside at that kind of frame, even though he's got that nice first step that you associate with a Pernell McPhee, say. A little small for edge setting at this point, but he's a situational pass rusher at the start. And again, he's a guy I think there is the possibility that he could work towards Sam responsibilities. So you know, a common thing, we haven't talked about this yet, is that it's very difficult. There aren't any real obvious Sam linebacker prospects coming out of this entire class, not sure. Guys who jump off the page. And the reason is the teams in college need their best pass rushers to rush the passer. So right. they you know, and those are the guys, the only guys who are considered. So your pool kind of changes and you have to project a little bit. And it's actually pretty rare that you get players like Tyus Bowser, who did a little bit of it in college. And so obviously, you know, project to being Sam guys. But I know there are guys who see him going in round two. If the Ravens could get him in round three, I'd be real excited about it.
So I'm a little bit lower on FAU, we'll call him, as you said. I have him in the honorable mentions category. I don't think he necessarily has one defining trait that you can kind of lean your hat on. And when I compare him to some of these other guys in this, you know, 6 to 10 range, I think some of these other guys have more upside, and as well as just plug and play utility in one specific role from day one, where Felix is more of a jack of all trades type. So that's my view, but there's quite a few guys. I mean, I don't think there's very much separating after the top 4 or 5 all the way down to maybe 15 or 18 on the list. You're on mute.
No, I'm not sure how they did that. Okay, but we should definitely have some differences and not be doing that. But it's no need to apologize ever for not having the same list. So we're at your number 7 guy, I believe.
Okay, number 7, Isaiah Folksky out of Notre Dame, 6'5", 264, 9.6 relative athletic score. Very good in all metrics. 34-inch arm length. He's very efficient. His pass rush win rate and pressures and all those stats they count ranked pretty close to the top. Bendian Athletic, I thought it was, you know, playmaker with some forced fumbles, blocked a couple punts. I think he does need to add some strength as a run defender, but I think he probably could kick inside potentially. He's got a nice inside dip move, and maybe the one thing that tiered him above some of the others, he showed maybe more coverage ability than some of these other folks in this range. So I think he's a intriguing athletic prospect.
Yeah, he's on my honorable mention list. And Maureen and I watch as much Notre Dame as anybody, because that's where she went. And we, you know, we enjoy watching those games together. Foskey, what held him back for me was that he plays through contact with power a little bit too much. Does he have a little bit of bend and dip? Well, everybody has a little bit of bend and dip, but I'd say this is kind of a weakness for him. He does dictate first contact extremely well, first contact, and gets the opponent off balance. That's a big thing. It's a big thing as a pass rusher. It's a big thing in run defense to get that tackle off balance a little bit. Has exceptionally powerful arms that really show up regularly. So good arm length of 34 inches, but drags people down. You know, he's one of the guys from this class, and I think there's one other who, if he gets his hand on a runner, a ball carrier, a quarterback, whatever it is, there's just an immense overreaction, it seems like, in how they are moved around, whether they're turned, flipped down, whatever you might see. We saw some of that out of Owe in his rookie year in particular. The play that will jump off in everybody's memory is the forced fumble against Kansas City. You know, he reached what seemed like 2 extra feet to get the football. I'm slightly exaggerating, obviously, but it was one of those great reach plays. So you like to see that. So far, pure pass rusher, but I thought the same thing, that he possibly could be a Sam as a pro. And, you know, just the bottom of the list got crowded. I was already cheating with two guys at number 10. And he is a guy that I think I would be very happy if the Ravens ended up getting him.
Yep, absolutely. I think that's your number 7.
Okay, so my number 7 guy is Will McDonald of Iowa State. I'm sure he's probably on your list somewhere. He's on a lot of people's list, and I probably like him a little bit less than other people. Arm length is almost 35 inches. 6'3", 236 is a little small, but he certainly has exceptional arm length. The problem with Will McDonald, 24 in June, so he's a year older than most of the class and 2 years older than some of the class. So that's obviously, he's one of the, on the older end. I can't project the same amount of improvement from him. Has tremendous explosiveness. It's on tape, and again, it's corroborated with these vert and broad measures, which are really nice to have when you can see it both places. He did not do the 40 or bench at the combine. He reportedly ran a 4.62 at his pro day. I look at pro day 40 times with a jaundiced eye, as the IRS absolutely would say.
Absolutely. So, a 38-yard dash.
it could be that as simple as that, that you trim down times. Because I've never even thought of that. You know, you hear three people with stopwatch each trimming off 0.08 seconds off these things. But yeah, sure. Teams will have legitimate question about his ability to play the run at his size. So I think he's a situational pass rusher in the NFL. Certainly not a guy you kick inside. Doesn't meet the Ravens' need exactly in those terms. But he's a real barbell of skills here, because there's a whole hell of a lot of real pass rushing talent in this guy. It's just there's a whole and some raw ability to go with that in terms of his length and the explosiveness. But then there's a whole bunch of other stuff that really makes me not want the guy, in particular the age, but other things about him just being not enough sand in the pants, not enough weight on his frame to be able to stand up against the run. So I think they're probably out based on when he will go, which will probably be in the second round. But if they project him as a Sam and they trade down, it could make sense. The second round, by the way, is a black hole for the Baltimore Ravens. A lot of pass rushers will be there. You mentioned early, hey, it's possible the Ravens trade down. And I think that there's a lot of talent to be had in that second round, particularly at this edge position. I think it's true at corner as well. So, you know, if they're not going to get one of the.
Hey, guys, I want to tell you about the Eufy Video Lock. Because when I'm not podcasting, I am. My day job is a smart home specialist. And the Eufy Video Smart Lock is perfect. This is what you guys need to go get. It replaces the deadbolt on your door. So now you can come home without fumbling with keys. You can just type in a code. Or even better, use your fingerprint to unlock after 1 second. You put your finger there, pops out, my door's open. It's perfect. It also is an integrated video doorbell. We've all seen the video doorbells. We all know the ones that are out there. I've seen many of them get stolen. No one's going to steal this because it's your door lock. It's impossible for them to steal. There's no monthly fee. Other ones do. But this one, it'll record locally, so you never have to pay if you don't want to. The battery, it lasts up to 4 months. Plus, it notifies you ahead of time. And I mentioned earlier, 1 second fingerprint recognition. No, I meant 1 second till it opens. The AI self-learning chip will learn your fingerprint even faster, and then it opens up. Completely keyless entry, no more keys. And I know I set this up as I'm a smart home specialist, but anyone can install this. All you need is a Phillips screwdriver. That's it. And then you're done. Guys, I love this product. Make sure you check it out. Now, here's the easiest thing to do. Just go on to Google or whatever you prefer and search Eufy Video Lock. That's EUFY Video Lock. Or visit eufyofficial.com/video lock to see how you can gain complete control of your door, just like me, just like Ken.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Save big money on your next project now at Menards. Update your home with low-maintenance vinyl windows from JELD-WEN. They're durable,
energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Say big on Geldwin windows now at Menards. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Really top aircraft carrier corners, then going to the second round might really work for them in terms of a trade down.
Yeah, certainly. You know, trading down usually makes sense, and with only 5 picks, it makes a lot of sense this year. I actually did not have McDonald in my top 10. The age concerns at 23 years old, coupled with the size concerns, sub 240 pounds is not great. Coupled with he's essentially going to be transitioning from a down lineman that he was playing even at that size to now. So just the combination of the three demerits there, comparing to the other players, he's certainly probably just league-wide better than, you know, 10th best. But for the Ravens and what they specifically need, it's a lesser version of Ojabo in some ways. So I just don't see how that benefits them too much.
All right, great point. I like that. So you didn't really see the Sam possibility with him, I think, as part of it. So
not as much, and maybe that could be developed, but at that size, it would make sense. He just didn't do very much of all of that, you know, at Iowa State.
All right. Well, fair enough. We're to your number six guy, right?
Yes. Keon White out of Georgia Tech, 6'5", 285. So he's got some sand in the pants. 24-year-old redshirt senior. So that's the big knock on him. Conversely, 9.92 relative athletic score. Very, very high athletic testing, 34-inch verse. Excellent run defender. He played anywhere from 3-technique, 5-technique, all the way out to wide 9. He's a pocket pusher. He's just a downhill, essentially a downhill defender. I think he's a high-floor player. He should be at that age. Developmental upside with technique, even at that age, I think he could improve his hand fighting. And just to kind of visualize maybe a player he could become, Cameron Jordan out of the Saints he's sort of much in that type of mold.
Okay. All right. Well, fair enough. Keon White was on my list of players. And I have this list put out a certain way, and I'll explain what I mean by this. These are players I don't want unless they fall a lot. So he's on that list for me with two other guys. The problem is primarily age. He's not just 24, he's 24 and a half right now. He turned 24 in January. So, you know, by the time the season starts, he's going to be closer to 25 than he is 24. That said, the guy has real grown man strength. And he's the other guy, 30 bench reps with 34-inch arms. Outstanding, like an unbelievable combination of bench and arm length there, which either him or the other guy we mentioned earlier are the two most impressive strength numbers in this class, or bench numbers anyway. And I saw the same thing that you did, that he was lining up as a 3 and sometimes a 2-eye. And he beat a double from the inside against North Carolina that really, you know, jumped off the tape to me. in terms of being a, and I couldn't tell you on the play exactly whether he lined up at three or two wide, but it doesn't matter. It was an inside play. I'm looking for him to be on the outside, and he's on the inside. I had to rerun the play a couple of times to see where he was. I go, oh, and then he beat a double team. It looked like parting the Red Sea to get by two guys there. So, you know, if you want to think early McPhee and the number of double teams he beat, it was a little bit out there, a little bit like that. I want the Ravens to get value if they take Keon White, because I think he's a one contract player. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the problem with the older one contract players is that when they go to free agency, you probably don't get the same kind of return on a comp pick, even if they bloom for you. Mm-hmm. So you're probably not talking about a guy who gets a huge second contract. Now, that said, I mean, hey, most of the value is in how he plays for the Ravens on that first contract. So if they got him late in the third round, I'm not going to be disappointed about it, but I'd prefer if they got him in round four and other teams share the generalized concern about him with regard to his age.
Yeah, I think he has a pretty wide draft range, really. It's going to be interesting to see where he goes. Not a whole lot of consensus among this group, I would say. Mm-hmm.
All right, terrific. So my number six guy, this is a guy I really love for specific needs for the Ravens, and that's B.J. Ojulari of LSU. Good size and shape, not exceptional. It's 6'2", 248, another 34 and a quarter inch arm guy. So we had a lot of really long edges in this class, which is remarkable. He just turned 21 on April 5th, which makes him one of the youngest players in the entire draft at any position. Didn't run the 40 or bench that I saw. This is one of the really weird situations, because I just turned 21. And you watch him play, he's got an incredible toolkit already in play. The guy knows how to rush the passer. He has a spin move that he uses both outside and inside that shows up on tape. He'll even use a spin move to get off a defender against the run, which I found really unusual. Mm-hmm. But his older brother, of course, is Azeez Ojulari, and it's probably true that he spent some time working on biomechanics with his brother in terms of really understanding some pass rush moves. I would be shocked if that, if that had not already occurred. He really is one of the few players in this draft who makes such a conscious effort to counter off that first move. And not only does he do it, it's the pace at which he does it is extremely good. So if you're talk about this with Adafeo way, because he's the prime example of a guy who's too good an athlete for anybody he ever faces at left tackle. Mm-hmm. He can force them into a bad move with his first move. But if it's almost like, you know, you want to see me draw again here with the gun when somebody doesn't even really draw, then it's like it doesn't matter if you can't pace it out to force that left tackle to make the first reaction, then work off that and go back. So I thought that was exceptionally good about this. Ojulari is a pad level guy, really needs to be at his kind of size, because he's not a big, thick guy, of course. Good, solid positional containment guy in the run game. Really nice combination of potential first contract play and a guy who might be a franchise cornerstone here. This is a guy who is young enough that you might sign him after 3 years, or sign him after 4 years if he ends up going in the first round, which I think is probably a little bit too high for him. But definitely a nice guy who could be a Sam linebacker potentially for this team. Very high floor prospect. And when I look at all of the potentials here, he can get stronger. He's already very polished as a pass rusher. He's already had a lot of success in the SEC, which is, obviously is playing at the highest level. He's not coming out of a small school. Balanced run and pass defense. He might have the tools to play Sam, and he's 21. Put all that together, I think you have a very high floor prospect. And he's the one guy in this draft, I'd say, that probably has less to learn from Chuck Smith as a pass rusher than anybody else. He's the guy. Right. So, I'd love him as a late second round selection if the Ravens can somehow trade back and get into that position. But that might be where it starts to get difficult.
Yeah, I think projections have him as sort of a top 50 type of prospect. We, of course, remember his brother coming out. Didn't get off to a great start, at least in my mind. And I think his brother had a little bit higher pedigree. They're built very similarly with long arms, but just a little bit shorter and smaller. I do agree with you. I think he's probably the most refined pass rusher in this class. I did not have him quite that high on my list, but after listening to you make the case, I think I'm going to have to move him up a little bit.
All right, fair enough. So he was down in your honorable mention group, or even off the list entirely?
No, no, he was my first honorable mention. If I had a tied for 10th, he would have been my tied for 10th.
Okay, very good. There should be some variation. That's always great. So, Wordy, you're number five guy, right?
Number five, the combine darling, Nolan Smith out of Georgia. Smaller guy, 6'2", 238, 9.25 RAS, 32 and about two-thirds inch arms. I think he's a Sam, a pure Sam at that size. He is undersized, but he's fast. He's was a five-star player. He's tough. He's a high character, all that sort of stuff. Sub 440 and a 41.5-inch vertical. Ordinarily, again, this is not a perfect fit. Let's see. Tyus Bowser's contract runs for, I believe, 2 more years. Let me just give me one moment. So, yes, it expires in 2024. And just sort of a top-line point about this position, why it may be better to invest. If you have a logjam and you need to trade, I mean, we've seen it with Orlando Brown and Marquise Brown, premium positions get premium return. We saw with Chuck Clark, you didn't get very much back. So I don't think there's a problem with really loading up your depth chart with 4 highly drafted edge rushers and let the cream rise to the top.
Well, that's fair enough. And the one guy, unfortunately, I don't think they would get a lot for at this point in his career is Bowser, even though he's you know, arguably the best player among the 4 of them right now, or whoever they draft. And you know, Bowser certainly include Hayes in that group. But I like Nolan Smith as well. And I had him, let's see, did I have him at number 3 or number 4? I had him at number 4. And here's my thing about Nolan Smith is that I agree with all you said about it. I think he also plays the run well, real good patience there. A lot of good pursuit against the run, but you expect that from a 439 guy. Had a really good bull rush that just shows up all the way. His game is really more about compressing the pocket. Now, this is one of the things I've seen said about Georgia. I don't watch enough Georgia play to know this is really how they run their defense, but that they use very controlled rush lanes. And so they try and have they have a lot of plays naturally where they don't really green light at least one side of their pass rush. So that may have been something that certainly held down his stats. He's not a big stat popping player in those terms. I think he has okay bend, not really special. Lot to add to the toolkit as a pass rusher. Again, that's when you have a guy who's got all of the athleticism and whatnot, and you add hopefully some refinement of that toolkit from Chuck Smith. There's hopefully a player there. I think he is. I think you've correctly identified that he's a multi-year project here, and I think he'll get on the field right away. I think the question is, in his case, when will he be first good? And it might be year 2. It might even be year 3. Yeah, the player like him, that it takes that long for the light to go on, for him to get more snaps and the real opportunity that comes from that live fire and the real growth that comes from that live fire, I should say. And the other thing about it is that Nolan Smith, the Ravens really only get one shot at him, and that's at pick number 22 as it stands right now. I think that's pretty close to where he's going to go. They have needs at cornerback and wide receiver. Somebody might take Nolan Smith earlier. It wouldn't shock me. He might still be available there and go in the late 20s. That wouldn't shock me either. It would kind of shock me if he lasts till anywhere significantly in the second round, meaning like about the 40th or 42nd pick. I'd be very surprised if he drops that far. So the Ravens only have one pick, and they have a lot of competing needs for it at cornerback, at wide receiver in particular. So I think they probably don't end up with him.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, it's always a little bit concerning, at least slightly, or something to ponder, when you had prospects coming from absolutely loaded up teams where you know, how much of their production is because every other player surrounding them is a five-star also. And for as great as that Georgia defense was 2 years ago, some say it's the greatest defense in college football history, not a whole lot of those guys popped their first year, really, as rookies. But they have 4 guys in the first round and 2 more guys on day 2. So, yeah, and he's also – I just looked up Bowser coming out, was 247. So he's about 10 pounds lighter than Tyus Bowser at that same point.
Okay. So he was all, he was my number four guy, I think also, or was he this year number five guy?
He was my five, but we already did. My four was Murphy.
Okay. And my five was Derek Hall. So your four was Murphy. My four was Nolan Smith. So what are your three?
My three, one of my favorite guys, who I don't know, maybe visions of grandeur, but Lucas Van Ness, 6'5", 272, 9.3 RAS, 34 inch arms, really an ascending player, redshirt sophomore, didn't start at Iowa. They have a upperclassman seniority policy. He's got legitimate two gap strength as a, 21 year old. So that's a plus. Really nice bull rush. Can kick inside, three technique, four technique, four eye shade. Plays with good leverage, I thought. Hands need some development, and also blocked several kicks. So that was another plus.
Yeah. So definitely a guy who I think would be an easy kick-in guy. So you don't have any question about that. There aren't too many of those in this class, but there are a few. You know, some of the bigger guys here make sense for it. Really outstanding pad level, and could work as a 4-3 end would be where I think he may end up. So some team with a need for that. By the way, that's always a risk. If you're banking on getting a particular 4-3 end guy, I think there's probably less in total of those guys than there are guys who could play outside linebacker under some specific conditions.
It used to be the other way. Yeah. About 10 years ago, it was the other way around.
Yeah. But now look at these guys. I mean, we have some length guys here in this class. So maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe the pendulum is swinging again. But definitely, I had heard it said that when you have a lot of teams playing 4-3, then you have a lot of demand for that specific body type. And so that's probably where it goes, is that the outside linebacker position now is, maybe it is swinging again. Anyway, my thought on that. Real outstanding pad level by Van Ness. He's also my number three guy, by the way. Good bend, good ability to bull rush. Again, that combination, there's only a couple guys in this class who really have it. You got a lot of guys who work through with power only. This is a guy who has both. I would not say he's got a really polished toolkit as well. So still a guy who definitely has something to learn at the NFL level. But definitely has some great fundamentals there. And a lot of that fundamentals, I think, comes from playing on the outside. When you think about what pass rushers do, it's a freelancing position. You know, you have a lot of ability, spread that tackle out, get to the quarterback as best you can. In when you play inside and you have run defense responsibilities, you have this complicated set of keys you have to read. And I'm not saying you don't have to hold the edge as an edge setter. You have to do that, but it's just much more complex to deny space on the inside as a five, as a three, and then be able to set up the other players around you. So it's not about your plays, it's about the other guy as well. So I think Van Ness's ability to do that is one of the things that's going to make him a more technically sound player at this point. Not an ideal fit for the Ravens based on who he is, because I think he ends up at a 4-3 end, but I don't think they have to worry about it, because there's no way in hell he's lost into number 22.
Yeah, I don't think so, but you never know. If he's on the board at 22 and he's your top guy and those, you know, lockdown corners are gone, and unless you really like a wide receiver, I would run that card in. And we know they have the Iowa connection with Ferentz as well. Mm-hmm. So a player that I was a little bit skeptical, and once I dug in more, I liked him even more.
Yeah. Well, fair enough. I think it's hard not to like him, but it's where you fit him. So he was my number three guy. Also, you're number two guy now.
I think you're up for two, because I did three first.
No, you always go first at every level.
I got it. Okay. Tyree Wilson, 6'6", 271. He's a game wrecker. He's really a game wrecker, I think. Really good player on stunts. Almost 36-inch arms. He's long. He's strong. He's physical. Heavy hands. Really heavy hands. Strong motor and some impressive lateral quickness. I think he's a guy not that the Ravens are going to be in drafting range, but he's a guy you build your defensive line around. Jadeveon Clowney comparables.
Yeah. Jadeveon Clowney is a very reasonable one. I thought Myles Garrett as well. Mm-hmm. Some of the moves he puts on, he gets double teamed a lot. If that guard gets there even a fraction late. So you got a typical setup with a guard bubble on that left side, and he's rushing off the against the naked tackle on that left side. So it's a tackle's responsibility only to start with, and that's really an oh crap moment for that left tackle facing him. But the guard has to process very quickly from center out, and this is what I talked about, and something I liked coming out of college about Ben Cleveland's game at Georgia was the ability to do that quickly. But that guard, he gets there a moment late, and it's just a man among, or a monster really among men, you know, right. Spreading those the two men there, and it's something I really associate with Myles Garrett, just unreal strength. When you look at what he did with that arm length, he still is at 23 bench reps. Another really impressive total from this draft class as far as that goes. Uses the bull rush a lot, and he is just too much for offensive tackles in terms of getting to the body there. Doesn't really go to the speed rush too often. And that's one of the criticisms about him is that you see regularly stated is that, you know, he's got good bend. He's got the ability to get to the edge. He's certainly explosive enough. But he just doesn't do it that much because he just likes contact. there is something about compressing the pocket I really like. And I don't really know what the Texas Tech defense was like in terms of responsibilities and how his compression of the pocket was maybe setting up other players. And that was something they wanted to do. But you can't help but love the guy once you see him on tape. He's absolutely outstanding. The other thing I'd add is that his run highlights are really spectacular. He's a guy who definitely bubbles, has good anticipation of where the run's going. He doesn't always make the tackle himself, but does have really good pursuit to the sideline. Really bubbles a play fairly frequently in what I watched. And you know what I mean by that is he's forcing the running back to take a looping or the quarterback sometimes on option plays to take a looping move around him that will cost him yardage and allow the pursuit to get there. I was very impressed by him pretty much from every characteristic. He's one of the guys in this draft does not have any significant weakness.
Yes, completely. I think he's top 10 lock. He should be a top 10 lock. I saw a few mocks where he made it to 22 and people said, I don't know. If you make it to 22, you pick him.
That's a card they'll run up for sure. Yes. If he lasts to 22. So we had the same number two, and I assume we have the same number one. Tell us what you thought.
I believe so. Mr. Will Anderson, the 6'3", 253 outside backer out of Alabama. Just the total package blue chipper, bendy, explosive, some prolific tackle for loss production. Yep. I think he had 40 tackles for losses 2 years ago in one season. He's a three-year starter, decorated. I mean, freshman All-American, second team, you know, second year All-SEC, just lighting it up as you would expect for a player with top five talent. Almost 34-inch arm, so weighed in and measured out a little bigger than I think people thought. He's got the speed rush. What I thought reminded me maybe of Von Miller when he disengages from blocks against the run and he can just kind of use that explosiveness to blow up plays in the backfield. So that's a player, hypothetically, a deal is struck with Indianapolis. If he's at four, I know you need a quarterback, but players like that don't come around too often.
Boy, that would really be something if they made a deal with Indianapolis and then they took a pass rusher. Oh boy, we're gonna hear it.
you gotta cornerstone players. I mean, that's the key, right?
There you go. So I've only got one beef on Will Anderson about his entire career. And it's just, you've mentioned so much of it in terms of his tackles for loss, 58 and a half tackles for loss in a three-year career, 34 and a half sacks in a three-year career. Here's the one number that just does not fit on this. He's got one forced fumble in all that time. Yeah. How do you sack the quarterback 34 and a half times and not force the fumble out more than once?
That's a good point.
So that is not the club that you would expect it, but he really looks to make the tackle, not to dislodge that football. And it's funny because he's got very heavy hands. I mean, you can see it in terms of how he gets by guys. I mean, he's Pernell McPhee in terms of playing a video game with those guys opposite him. Gets the corner exceptionally well. Got that great first step. Got terrific bend. I mean, that combination, heavy hands and bend. Nobody should have both of those things. It's right. Not fair. I mean, right. And that's why he's obviously where he is. He'll be gone long before the Ravens get to pick in the top 10. So they won't get him. It's unfortunate. It's an interesting idea you have, though. Number four. You get know, number four. Take Will Anderson.
You know, I mean, if you want an elite defense that's going to prop up your offense, you need elite pass defender. So, and this is a topic for another podcast, but if Lamar is not with the Ravens next year, I am a strong proponent of going to a 2-year plan at that point. So I wouldn't take any stud players like a Will Anderson off your board.
Okay. So then maybe take a quarterback you like in the mid round, go with the Tyler Huntley plan, or maybe bring in a different veteran. Yeah.
I would try to go with somebody that's going to give you a decent floor where you're not wasting the year, but I would try to preserve some assets for the 2-year plan.
Yeah. I think, you know, we're seeing that they met with AR-15 for a second time now after with the Lamar situation being what it is. I don't think that's a contract negotiation ploy. I honestly believe they need to consider backups at this point, which is sure. it probably means not good things for the Lamar negotiation, honestly. But even if Lamar plays here next year, that's kind of the perfect situation for Richardson to come here and have a year. And then they know they have a more difficult situation next year with regard to tagging Lamar. It would, again, I would bet, be the non-exclusive tag a second time in a row. And they'll try and get 2 number ones for him again. But unless Lamar would come back with a big season, I think that's probably unlikely to happen again. So you have Richardson able to play in year 3. If he doesn't play in year 2, that could be perfect for him in terms of, growing a little bit. And I think a lot of it has to depend then on where they think he'll drop, because 22, not that unreasonable if you're looking at, real talent, but quarterbacks always get a bump. Seattle's drafting, I think, at number 19. So they would have a need and a likelihood of taking him. Similar situation, with them in terms of how many years they have until he's ready kind of thing. That's the kind of quarterback that they would probably like to have. So I think a lot of the Ravens draft strategy in terms of how they trade, in terms of, what they're willing to do, really flows around that one player and thinking, where does he end up on the board?
Yeah, no, it's a tough spot. It's a really tough spot. But just as a general drafting roster construction theory, I am completely in favor of looking a year ahead and drafting a player to stockpile to get the pipeline going at the premium positions. So quarterback, pass rushers. At devalued positions, like a running back, you have 3 running backs on the roster.
Yeah.
You don't need to draft to just spend a third round on a running back this year and have him sit on the bench for 25% of his rookie contract. Draft him. There's always going to be running backs. There's going to be 20 running backs next year too.
And 8 guys that they'll like as stylistic fits that other teams discard. They'll be guys they can find there. Look, I'm completely with you, and this is maybe a time to have this discussion since we've done this in record time for a draft conversation of this loaded a position. Not drafting premium positions in the first round is something the Ravens did last year. And I think we'd have to say fairly that their draft of Hamilton at number 14 looks like it was a great pick. It was a pure value pick. And not only did they end up with a player of truly exceptional value at his position, they ended up getting a cornerback, which is a key position. And I from what the Ravens have done so far, even with the loss of Chuck Clark, it still looks to me like they might be depending on Hamilton to play slot this year.
Yeah. Well, if Geno's going to be on the back end or if they're going to bring in Amos. So, I think we should really redefine this conversation by the record. It should be called premium positions. It should be called premium skill sets. Okay. So if you're a rangy free safety, that's a premium skill set, whether you play safety or not. If you're a penetrating nose tackle, that's a premium skill set. If you're a matchup tight end, but you're not a blocking tight end, obviously isn't, because it's just a supply and demand. But there was a very interesting study about surplus value and how taking premium positions gives you the maximizing surplus value. I want to say it might have been Benjamin Albright, someone, but it really dived into the opportunity cost of passing on a premium position, where you can hypothetically have a player in his third year earning a few million dollars a year. And if he was a free agent on the open market, his play would be worth $20 million a year. You don't have that at devalued positions. You can have the best running back in the league that you get at right. the first round, but he's still only saving you so much.
Right. I'm with you that it would be a terrible idea to draft a running back early in this draft. Draft one late, pick up the UDFAs you want, and scour the other rosters in the league. I think you find the supplementary things. The problem is that the Ravens have a very old running back room right now. Right. Everybody's a year four or later. I mean, this is J.K. Dobbins' last year as a Raven, unless something unusual happens with a long-term signing. And I think you and I, in terms of franchise building philosophy, are both not in favor of long-term contracts for running backs. I think he'll get one. You know, he's going to make $6-7 million a year. If he has another good year, he certainly would make, I think, at least that somewhere else. So that would mean that this is JK's last year. I hope he has a really big year. Hope he has great value when he leaves the team. But I don't see the Ravens re-signing him given the need for money elsewhere on the team.
Sure. I'd agree with that. Never a good idea. I mean, you can literally look at the last 15, maybe 30 running back contracts that were paying them within the top 10 salary at the position. How many of those guys actually played out that contract? One, I mean, it's just, we saw it this year. Derrick Henry's on the trade block. Dalvin Cook's on the trade block. Joe Mixon's got released. Eckler wants a new deal. Every single run, I mean, it's just, it's tough for them, but it's just not philosophically smart. I think it's usually the second round, third round. That's a sweet spot. You get one, you put them on the highway for 4 years, and then you change the tires.
Then you put them on the other highway out of town. I'm in agreement. So I want to ask about one last player, because you can't get through this without talking premium skill sets. But then the draft at number 25 of Tyler Linderbaum. And the Ravens had a different way they could have pulled the same thing that would have accomplished the same positional needs. I think it would probably given them a good player at both positions in the long run. Probably not quite as good as how Tyler played in his first year. I am critical of Tyler Linderbaum as a pass rusher. I still think he's a long way from being where he needs to be there. Pass blocker. Did I say that? Mm-hmm. I think I might have said pass rusher.
I know what you meant.
Know what I meant. But anyway, he was 135% of what the Ravens could have expected as a run blocker in terms of converting most of that to the NFL level, being very fast in space, good in level 2, all that. The question is, if he still had it again to do today, Kyir Elam did not have the greatest first year with Buffalo, but the Ravens had him available. And the guy they could have had in the later rounds that would have filled the center position is Zach Tom, who ends up playing left tackle for Green Bay, for a fair amount. Some left guard that does not yet played center, but that's where a lot of people project him to end up. Would he be a guy, would that have been the double you'd rather have? And would you still exchange the two players at this point?
I think I probably would, just because I know you've made this point many times, pass protection is more valuable than run blocking. Mm-hmm. And it, of course, Linderbaum gives you that versatility to now you can run more zone, which maybe offsets that a little bit. I think really you want to aim for a 75% premium position ratio or premium skill set, if you want to call that, within probably the first three rounds. Once you get to day three, you can get a special team or get whatever you want, really. Take a swing on a high floor or a high ceiling, take a swing on. But that gives you some leeway to say, okay, this Hamilton once every 5 years, once every 10 years guy fell, he's a safety, but we're not rigid like maybe Philadelphia or some other teams, about Miami, I think, are so rigid where they will only pay premium, they will only draft primo. You got to give yourself, but you got to be above 50. And I think the cost has been pretty close to 50% last time I mapped it out. If you can kick that up maybe 10, 15%, I think it probably help them be able to put the pieces of the team together in a more efficient way long term.
All right. Well, it's I love talking franchise building topics with you, Voss, even though we don't 100% agree on some things, in particular the riding the cycles of roller coaster parody. We definitely don't agree on that one, but really sure. Appreciate the discussion, because you've good reasons for your arguments, and as always, pleasure to talk prospects with you. Tell folks where they can find your work online.
Sure. So my Twitter handle is at Vasilis Beatdown, Vasilis Beatdown. I am the co-managing editor at Baltimore Beatdown. I publish a daily Ravens news 5 times a week, as well as some independent work, and just launched a new podcast titled The Ravens Way with a friend of mine, Yuri Marshall. It's just every Thursday night around 9 o'clock, we do a live stream. Just literally had the first two episodes, so we're just getting it up to speed, but happy to talk draft. We did a pretty thorough analysis of the wide receiver draft prospects on that last episode, and we'd love to have you join us.
Oh, well, look forward to seeing that sometime. If you need a guest, I offer, but you know, not begging certainly, but really
absolutely. No, thank you. Thank you.
All the folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short this offseason, I'm still looking for content, looking for people to do that one play episodes, but also other stuff. If you have some draft philosophy stuff you want to talk, you see how much I'm into this with Voss here. But if you've got your own philosophy on how things should be meted out in the draft, or maybe that the Ravens use too steep a scale when they try and trade down and they should be more willing to trade down or more willing to trade up, whatever it might be, happy to talk about that kind of thing. And we have lots of opportunities. Draft context takes priority right now. There are a lot of that one play episodes that are in the bag. We're going to do more, but they're going to be stretched out into June and probably even early July in terms of when they air. We'll warn you on that in advance, but I'll get back to you right away. DMs are always open on Twitter. Voss, thanks again for coming on.
My pleasure, Ken. Thank you.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.